But Chris Comer, Director of Conservation for Safari Club International, okay? It's Nevada Wild, Jerry Evans here. We're at Safari Club International at the 47th Annual Convention, and what we've been doing here these last couple of days is recording some interviews to bring to you here on Nevada Wild throughout the year. And one of the conversations that we had is with Chris Comer. He's a Director of Conservation for Safari Club International. It's good to have you back here. I'm glad to know that you'll be here for a couple more years, too.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. This is actually the first time I personally have been to Reno with the convention, but it's been a great venue. We've had a great time here. I spent some time in Reno several years ago doing some other work. It's a great area of the country. Love to spend some time here.
Where's home for you?
Home for me right now is in Washington, D.C. Before that, I lived in Texas for several years. Recently moved to Washington, D.C. when I got this position.
And one thing that I've learned since SCI left Reno and has come back is now the home office is in Washington, D.C.
That's correct. The home office. We have a dual home. One is in Tucson, Arizona, and then where I work,
In D.C., used to work with Nelson Freeman there, and we've had Anna we talked to earlier the legal team, the legal aspect of which there's no shortage of things for her to do.
That's for sure. She's
and
not short on work.
Representing hunters. Explaining conservation to those that don't get or quite get what exactly Safari Club International does regarding conservation.
So conservation itself, conservation is not the same thing as preservation, right? Conservation, an important component of that, dating way back to Teddy Roosevelt and those who kind of pioneered the term conservation. Conservation includes sustainable use of resources, right? Use is an important part of it, and that's where, of course, Safari Club International is very interested in sustainable use of wildlife resources as part of conservation. Now, I work for the Safari Club International Foundation, which is a charitable organization, and I'm the head of the conservation department. And so we use money that comes from hunters through Safari Club International memberships, through private donations and other sources. And we use those resources to support wildlife research and wildlife management projects really all over the world. So that's our mission, is to do that.
What's your annual budget?
Our annual budget, it varies, of course, depending on things like market conditions and stuff. But for conservation, we're typically in the range of $800,000 to a little over $1 million a year that we're distributing.
What's been the best use of that money where you could give somebody a solid, tangible example of what you've done?
Sure. One of our really great projects that's an easy one to sort of get behind is a project related to wood bison restoration in Alaska.
Perfect, perfect. I remember 10 years ago when I used to do the show for SCI, that was happening that year. Over the years, I've caught a few news stories here and there about what a success that's been.
It's been very successful, and the foundation was a critical component of that success. Right now, actually, the Fish and Wildlife Service is reviewing the status of the wood bison to see whether the listing of it can be changed. And they're also considering initiating a second translocation project to set up another population in Alaska. So, I mean, they're very happy with how that's turned out.
What has the population grown from when that first got off the ground in 08, I think?
Something like that. It was started at 125 or 130 animals, I believe. I don't have any current information. I know 2 or 3 years ago, they had their first very successful reproduction. They produced calves. I would have to look and see what the actual number is that they have now, but it's definitely grown since that initial.
But the anti-hunters would say, but you're just reintroducing these animals to be able to hunt them.
Well, that's not correct. that is a component of that project. Hopefully that population will eventually be healthy enough and abundant enough that we can hunt them, and I think it's going to get there actually fairly soon. But that's not the ultimate goal, right? The ultimate goal is to restore a portion of that wildlife community that was there previously. And if allowing use of that, use that resource in the long term, gives people an incentive to do that, right? And to me, that's a good thing.
And frankly, to help grow the resource.
Of course.
If additional funds are available, because if somebody does that, they're not going to be able to do it for free.
Right.
So
if
it gets to that point, but here's a perfect example of a species that wasn't there. It was put back by hunters. Plain and simple.
That's correct.
And Safari Club International.
And there are many examples. If you go back through in North America, for sure, even something as abundant as we think of it now, white-tailed deer, if you go back to the early 1900s, white-tailed deer was very much reduced in range, and it was through active restoration programs and habitat improvement and regulations on harvest that we restored white-tailed deer populations in the eastern United States and Canada to a point now, of course, they're really abundant, and we all sort of take that for granted. Mm-hmm. But that was really hunters getting behind that effort that made that happen.
Yeah, that and other wildlife organizations, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation,
absolutely.
Pheasants Forever, quails, on and on and on.
Ducks Unlimited.
Those are hunters that restore not only wildlife and the habitat. It's a struggle to continue to do that, but we could certainly use more and more help from hunters to join organizations like Safari Club International.
Absolutely,
if we could
right.
just get the word out there. Wouldn't you like to see about at least 10% of the population of hunters be members of Safari Club International?
Yes, of course. Of course I would. Well, personally, that would be great for our organization, but I think really hunters should be getting behind this idea of putting their resources toward restoration and conservation of all wildlife species, not just hunted species. Because anytime you're working on habitats that benefit, let's say, waterfowl, right? There's all sorts of other species that use those wetlands and use those habitats that aren't hunted, but they still benefit from the work that's being done by hunters. And that's certainly true of a lot of species.
And it's not a shopping mall.
No,
so, you know,
no,
so
certainly not.
It's wildlife. It's getting out there. Again, even if you don't hunt, to not take an anti-hunting stance, but understand what hunters do for conservation and for animals and for wildlife is something that's it's a hard message to get out there to more and more people.
Well, yeah, like you said, I mean, Safari Club International Foundation, so our motto is first for wildlife, and that's really what we are. We're interested, of course, in supporting sustainable use of wildlife resources, but we contribute to these projects all over the world with species that may or may not be hunted at the time that we're dealing with them. So, for instance, we're supporting better quantifying lion populations in Tanzania and other African countries so that we can better monitor those populations so that we know what is the level of harvest that is sustainable, right? That we can make sure that regulated hunting is going to benefit these populations and not harm them. And that's a point I really want to drive home. A misconception a lot of people have about hunting is that regulated hunting causes declines in populations, and that's simply not true today. That, you know, particularly in North America, but even anywhere else in the world, regulated hunting has not caused any species to become endangered or to disappear, right?
Again, Chris Comer, the Director of Conservation for the SCIF. One of my favorite writers, Tom McIntyre, used this example to me once, which is just perfect, about the Bengal tiger. Mm-hmm. When the Bengal tiger was put on endangered species list, the population was 200. Fast forward 18 years later, the population was at 200, 201, something to that effect, maybe even less than 200. There's a completely ban on hunting, no ifs, ands, or buts. The animal will never be hunted, and yet the population did not grow over a 15 to 20-year period. There's probably a hunter in this building today that would pay $500,000 to hunt a Bengal tiger, especially if he knew that part of that $500,000 would go to conservation to grow the species of the Bengal tiger, Chris.
That's what, for example, with the tigers, the real limitation on them is habitat that's available for them, right? There's just no, they need a lot of area and they need to be relatively free from human interactions. And clearly it's not hunting that's limiting their population now because they haven't been hunted in many years. Yeah. It's other factors related to habitat availability, really.
Yeah. Here in the United States, for those hunters that may, most don't, but may have a negative view of Safari Club International, safari hunting, etc., and you're just an international organization that you're just concerned about Africa, wildlife, and populations there over there.
That's a good point because a lot of people do have a perception of Safari Club International. And it's unfortunate because that really isn't what we're about. Most of our members are obviously from North America, and most of them are, you know, the standard deer, turkey, duck hunters that everybody knows. Probably if you're a hunter, you know that, you know, that's what most hunters are. So for the foundation, about 60 to 70% of our resources every year go toward projects in North America. And for example, we're supporting several projects right now examining mule deer populations and elk populations in the western United States and western Canada. So Alberta, Wyoming, Idaho, Colorado, some of those states. Where particularly with mule deer, you know, mule deer populations have been doing relatively poorly over the last couple of decades for a variety of reasons. Habitat, land use change, probably the most important one. But there's some disease issues and other things there as well.
I would also throw in the fact that we're not growing predator hunters as part of the reason why as well.
Predation's another issue, yeah. So, and again, to me it's a good thing in a lot of ways that our predator populations, some of the predators that, you know, 100 years ago or so had been eliminated from much of the West, the mountain lions and wolves, now are back. That shows that's a conservation success story, but it does create some issues. You know, these predators have been gone for a while, and then they come back, and then these prey populations have to deal with them, and so now we need to manage both of them together, right? Because it's a complete system.
And the all-encompassing Safari Club International is the education part with ALLS as well, to bring teachers and educators and more youth into the sport of hunting. You need to grow that hunting base as well.
So interesting story. When I was I did not grow up, unlike most folks here, I did not grow up in a hunting family. My family didn't have any hunting history, and what got me into it, and I think it's true for most people, is somebody that I knew that I respected, that I knew cared about conservation and cared about wildlife, was a hunter and talked to me about that and took me out, and I saw what hunting was really about, and it totally changed my life in terms of my view of sustainable use and all that stuff. So I think the more people we have out there that know that and then can help other people to see that side of it, that's going to be the most important benefit we can have.
Chris Comer with Safari Club International, the Director of Conservation. Chris, one of the issues that we have out here in the West, and that's the sage-grouse population. You know, you listen to both sides. Each one makes a little bit of sense. It's that coming together to agree on something. Was Safari Club International involved in that in any way?
We were. So, interesting, again, the perception of Safari Club International is we only care about big game species overseas, but no, this is not a big game species, certainly not overseas, right? It's right here in Nevada. And we got involved supporting some of the research that was done as part of developing a comprehensive management, habitat management plan for sage grouse that could allow grazing and other uses of the landscape where sage grouse could benefit from that as well, right? We could look at ways to graze that landscape that would benefit sage grouse and cattle owners and other folks that would be interested in using that land.
I will give my personal editorial opinion, and I have somebody to back me up here behind it, and it's not just guessing. It's being out there and hunting out there and seeing areas where grass used to grow 2 feet high through these meadows, because I actually have friends that are these wild horse advocates. Mm. 10 years ago, you guys were working with BLM and studies on that. But when you see areas where there used to be just phenomenal habitat for birds and for elk, and now it is eaten down to nothing, it's the situation where, again, if a population of a species grows by 15 to 20% each year, in 5 years you've doubled the population, and you haven't doubled the resource, and land hasn't doubled. And that's a real issue that the wild horse people, they're so sensitive about, you know, removing wild horses. It's just a matter of management that you have to do. But my opinion is that they've certainly affected the sage-grouse habitat.
No question about it.
More so than cattle ranchers.
Yeah, and of course, the horse is a non-native species that is, you know, uncontrolled population. So, yeah, feral horses are very difficult and thorny issues, anyone will tell you. I will say that we're not the primary drivers for this, but there is an educational, informational campaign out there right now supported by the Wild Sheep Foundation and some of our Nevada chapters of Safari Club International and by the foundation that's going to do some great film work looking at this issue of feral horses, because it is a hard one, and people have very strong feelings about it, as you know.
Well, listen, we'll see what happens between now and next year when you're back for the 48th. Right. Let's talk again then and see where we are. You can fill me in on 2019. Be an interesting year in a lot of different ways, but we certainly look forward to talking to you then and getting caught up with the Safari Club International Foundation. And thanks for the good work you do, Chris.
Oh, my pleasure. Enjoy talking with you.
Chris Comer, the Director of Conservation for Safari Club International.